Hi, my name is Mandy Jackson Beverly, and I'm a bibliophile. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Bookshop Podcast, where I interview booksellers and independent bookshop owners from around the world. You're listening to episode number 67. To help the show reach more people, please share with friends and family and on social media. And remember to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast. Within these walls, books reign supreme. Mr. B's is a beautiful, energetic, and innovative bookshop on John Street in the heart of Bath in England. The bookshop is a bright, labyrinthine space where book-related chatter and advice seems ever-present, and you never know what you might encounter next, from clawfoot Bath book displays to toilets illustrated by Chris Riddell. Nick and Juliet Bottomley opened Mr. B's in 2006, and it has twice been named the UK's best independent bookshop. In 2015, The Guardian named Mr. B's one of the 10 best bookshops in the world. Today, I'm delighted to be chatting with Nick. Hi, Nick, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, and Bath is one of my favorite cities. It is absolutely beautiful. I have a son in the UK along with many dear friends. It's a great place.
Oh, excellent.
So, from lawyers to bookshop owners, when and how did this transition happen?
So, it happened in, it began in 2004. Probably the love of books began a lot earlier than that. But the decision in 2004 that my wife, Juliet, and I made was that when we finished our jobs as lawyers, we were going to do something that we really wanted to do, not just to jump to something that was kind of adjacent or to that profession. And we had the actual idea of setting up a bookshop came when we were on honeymoon together. So we honeymooned in Alaska. But on the way to Alaska, we began the honeymoon with 3 nights in Seattle and then 3 nights on the San Juan Islands just off Seattle. And it was when we were in Seattle that we spent kind of a disproportionate amount of time at the brilliant, the still brilliant, Elliott Bay Book Company, admiring everything they did. And then it was when we were on San Juan that we got to thinking, you know, as all decisions, best decisions are made on a terrace with a glass of wine or a gin and tonic or something. Got to thinking about, hey, what? There aren't so many bookshops like that. I mean, I know now that there were some, but there aren't so many bookshops that focus on service and recommendation so much in the UK. So maybe if they can do it, we could do it. And that's where the idea came from.
You chose a great place in the world to become inspired. The San Juan Islands are absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, we were on one of those, you know, on a little tiny little balcony of our room, a clapboard, bed and breakfast, overlooking the bay. And, you know, we'd spent the day on a frustrating search for orcas that famously exist there, but which we failed to see. We saw some good wildlife later on the trip, so it was okay. But just sitting there and, yeah, you need that headspace. I always think that, we should, you know, even since we've had the shop, some of the kind of weirder and better ideas and some of the ones that weren't so good that we didn't pursue, it often comes when we take a few days away from the shop and have time to think about it.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think some of the best ideas probably come unexpectedly when you're away from what you're supposed to be thinking about. And the idea just comes into your mind because it's empty. You're not overwhelmed. You're free to think up these great ideas.
Yeah, probably.
Where were you living prior to locating to Bath? And why Bath for Mr. B's Emporium?
So, no, we were living in Prague in the Czech Republic, just to sort of complicate the story even more. So we came back from honeymoon, carried on living in Prague, and we began the process of moving back to the UK with a view to setting up the bookshop kind of the following summer of left Prague finally autumn 2005. So that was just because I worked for an international law firm. It had an office in Prague and we had a real fondness for that part of the world. So we'd gone to live there for more than 3 years. But we did know that at some point we wanted to moved back to the UK, despite, you know, being big fans of lots of parts of the rest of the world. We wanted to sort of base ourselves a bit in the UK because of family and everything. And this area was one that I'd been visiting an awful lot since I was a child. We hadn't actually lived here, but then at one point my parents had an apartment here and they were thinking of retiring to this area. So it kind of had a lot of connections. Juliet wasn't so familiar with it, but she kind of fell in love with it a little bit as well. So, and we really started it. And I guess we really thought that this part of the world, either a small market town, but actually when we really started looking into it, for what we wanted to create, it needed to be a city like Bath, or a town, a big town or a city like Bath. We really thought it was the right place for a community that would really embrace a bookshop that was, you know, eccentric, eclectic, and yeah, serious about loving books.
I've talked to quite a few people who love Mr. B's, and I'm sure the photos don't even do it justice. But I like the quirkiness and the eccentric kind of look to it. That kind of design is right up my alley, especially for an indie bookshop.
Yeah, I guess we started with that and it's gradually built up because, you know, it began as three rooms or four rooms and then now it's 9 or 10 rooms, depending on sort of how you look at it. And it's a labyrinth and we've added more and more quirky little bits and strange bits. We kind of want it to be somewhere where you never know necessarily what kind of books you're going to find out on display. I mean, you know, a little bit, you know, we have categories as well, but you never know what's going to be displayed, what's going to be really recommended to you. And you certainly never know what other random things you might find. You know, it could be a clawfoot bath that's actually a book display. It could be a whole wall that's wallpapered in correct order in a Tintin comic. It could be a life-sized wooden anatomical reader. Yeah, you never know.
It truly does sound like an emporium. Now, you and your wife, Juliet, opened Mr. B's Emporium in 2006. And since then, the bookshop has been twice named the UK's best indie bookshop. And in 2015, The Guardian named Mr. B's one of the best 10 bookshops in the world. So what is your magic ingredient?
Yeah, well, I mean, that Guardian thing came completely out of, you know, the blue. And it was obviously just an editorial thing, but I don't know if it's true, but it's extremely humbling and lovely to hear. Yeah, we have picked up all kinds of awards over the years. What's the magic of it? I don't know. I guess the thing is that we are quite an irreverent space, and we are a space where conversations about books are more important than anything. That can be just on the shop floor, which I know is not unique to us as an indie, but we really encourage people to recommend, to have that opportunity to talk in depth. Then that's just a shop floor thing, but then it spills over into the various gifts that we kind of created over the years. First, our reading spas, which is like a gift that you can purchase that gives you that one-on-one time with a bookseller and tea and cake, and it kind of makes an experience out of the very best thing that a good independent bookseller in the individual sense gives you. And then also our subscriptions, which we began very early. I mean, it's very popular these days, but began back in 2011. And those are also bespoke. It's all about hand picking. You know, we don't say this is our book of the month. We hand pick for every customer based on their reading tastes, which we find out about. So I think if there's one thing that has served us well, it's this geeky, genuine desire to find people the books that they're going to be wowed by and that's going to keep them in love or make them fall in love with reading, rather than just settling for what, you know, what people are talking about generally or what have you, really trying to dig deep into that. And then, you know, there are other factors, yeah, but that kind of ties into the book, individual books. Therefore, we hire people who love books, you know, more than anything else, and who can communicate well with customers about it. And the second, and I guess the other thing is, yeah, the atmosphere of the place and the kind of, you know, the quirky space that we talked about. There are a few other elements, but I think those are the things that have served us best.
Yes. In fact, I heard about Mr. B's Emporium via Tamsin Keeley, an author who is going to be on the show in a few days. And She loves it. She's a primary school teacher and she has a young child. So she says your children's book section is wonderful. But she also spoke highly of your monthly book selection and she's a member of that. And I guess you'll just have to listen to Wednesday's episode to hear what she has to say. So let's talk about publishing, specifically Fox, Finch and Tepper.
Yeah, so this is a micro publisher. It has not done a lot in the last 18 months because it is a baby sister company to the bookshop. And there's been two times, therefore, where it has had to just pause its activities. Once when we were expanding the shop about it 2 years ago and another with the pandemic. We've had to throw all our resources, I guess, at the big sister, the shop itself. But other than those times, we have set out to buy the rights to and reissue books that we love that have been published either never in the UK or have fallen out of print in the UK and that we really want to recommend, but that we think other bookshops will enjoy recommending as well. And we publish them. We go through the whole process of publishing them. So we sort of taught ourselves that as much as we can. And we published six titles so far. Interestingly, of those six, I think four are American, actually, the American titles that had not been published over here, or at least had been for a very short length of time. So Peter Hedges' What's Eating Gilbert Grape, The Next Step in the Dance by the brilliant Southern-based writer Tim Gautreaux, Tepper Isn't Going Out by the New Yorker columnist Calvin Trillin, and most recently The Women of Brewster Place by Gloria Naylor. And also one German book and one Australian novel. And yeah, they do really well. And, they sell really well. They took over very nicely through other independent shops and through the chains here. And we sell them a lot and recommend them. And we make sure they're beautifully published, I must say, And yeah, we're right now in the midst of kind of planning a seventh title. Haven't quite, sort of signed the contract on it. So I probably can't share it. But I think we'll gradually expand a little bit what we do in that area now that we're coming out of this, I hope, coming out of the most tumultuous bit of, what we've been experiencing. I hope that's fair to say, but it may not be. And if we are, then I think we'll step up a little bit of the publishing activity.
And do you see yourself publishing new authors?
I think we may look at doing that. The books that we've done so far have been, have had a very broad brief. The one thing we've said is that they are books that have with them, that bring the world closer or have a strong sense of place in some form. And I think we'll keep that to what we publish because it's sort of just one interesting hook to it. But other than that, we have no ego about the identity of the publisher. It's all about the books. Each book looks how it should look for the book, I think, rather than for the publishing house. So we're not trying to create some kind of brand identity with that publisher. But if an opportunity came up that was with a book that had not been published yet, I think maybe we don't necessarily haven't learned the editorial skills or, that kind of side of the business yet. But I think that we're in a position where we might start thinking about that. But I think, there's a lot of projects we've got on at the moment and a lot of it has been about just settling everything down again, after all the upheaval of the last 18 months. So we're maybe not quite there yet, but yeah.
Well, please keep me in mind when you have your debut new author. I'd love to have him or her or them on the show. That'd be great. Now, you're not the first bookshop where James Patterson's name has come up. And I was wondering what was the impetus behind creating the reading tree and the children's room. And I'm also interested to learn about the decorations within Mr. B's Emporium by artist Alex Lucas. They are absolutely gorgeous and fun.
Yeah, they are great fun. So she is it's well worth people looking her up. She's called Alex Lucas. Her website is Lucas Antics. And she is lives in Bristol, 12 miles away from where I'm sitting now. And she is an artist and street artist. There are a number of businesses and houses in Bristol that are painted by her on the outside. And it's incredible what she does. And she's sort of a bit of a friend of the shop. And she, so when we did the expansion of the shop, we really got her to let rip in our children's section and create this incredible mural that's there. She painted the wall of the room that we call our imaginarium. She painted all sorts of animals and creatures all over the place. And her partner is a carpenter, so he built the tree that she then painted. The original tree was in our children's section, but then got moved when we expanded the shop 2 years ago into the bigger children's section, and then kind of was rejuvenated and more, and a second tree kind of joins it, or sort of from out of the wall. So it's all made of wood. If anyone's thinking, Hannah, how do we keep it alive? It's all made of wood. It's all very brightly painted. And yeah, she's incredible. But it's, you know, just to go back to what you said at the beginning about James Patterson, I'm also heavily involved with our trade association for our industry. And, you know, what James Patterson has done for independent bookshops in the US and in the UK is really incredible. You know, he's really reached into his own pocket. You know, he's very open about the fact that, you know, he sells an awful lot of books, and he's very open about the fact that he considers bookshops of all types to be his partners in doing that and helping him do that over the years. And he really looks to give back in the most proactive way, in a way I'm sure lots of people would if they'd been lucky enough to sell that quantity of books. But he's the one who's really stepped up and done that. And he created this grant scheme first in the US, where I think I'm right in saying he gave away $1 million of his personal wealth into giving grants to bookshops who wanted to do things to better engage with children, young readers especially, but to do things in their shop. And then he gave another very large sum, I can't quite remember what it was, but to UK bookshops with a similar purpose. And at that time we had a smaller children's section. We had not plotted our kind of expansion into the second room, and that's where we said, well, we'd like to make it more special. So we wanted to commission Alex to make this tree. And it was mostly through a grant from James Patterson that we were able to do that.
You know, we forget all over the world, there are people doing wonderful, wonderful things. And James Patterson is one of them. And I doubt a lot of people would even know that he's behind this. So thank you for sharing that with us. And yeah, it just makes me feel really, really good. Now, you did mention the Imaginarium. It's a creative space for visiting creatives, but I'm guessing it hasn't had much use of late. So do you have any plans to open it up in the future? And can you explain how the space was used before COVID?
Yeah. So the Imaginarium is sort of, when we expanded the shop, there's a sort of little section where we had room for 5 bays of books, and we decided to make a totally different floor, a wooden harlequin, white and kind of teal colored floor, which is very, very striking. And then we have a very bold, as I say, mural from Alex Lucas on the back wall of it with the words Imaginarium on there. And we had a desk there, and we put the desk there to be used by, it could be a writer, could be an editor, could be an illustrator, because we'd had a couple of people wanting to be illustrator in residence for a little while at the shop. So the idea is they can rent the desk for a small fee that is predominantly for charity and sort of covering just a few little costs around it. And it's about them being able to work creatively in a space where readers are. I expected authors to tell me that they got nothing done because they're just listening to conversations and watching, and people would come up. And of course, there's a pile of that author's books there in case a member of the public wants to engage and pick up and buy a book, which is, you know, not the main point, but part of it. And I expected them to tell me that they got nothing done. But actually, what I've learned from talking to a lot of writers is that better be in the middle of a busy bookshop than be thinking about whether you should procrastinate by doing your laundry or something like that. So actually, people seem to get quite a lot done. Maybe that's just a sign that a lot of the British browsers were nervous at hassling them and interrupting them. So I don't know. It's not used all the time for that, but it was being used regularly for that. Right now, well, during the pandemic, at the times when we've been able to have the shop open, but with social distancing, it actually became an important workspace for us because we're trying to space out our team in the offices below are a little bit cramped. So we needed to use it. It was useful to have another person who was on a computer, but also on the shop floor. So temporarily, in fact, I was in there yesterday. It's a little like working in a greenhouse because of the heat that we've got temporarily here. And it's got a beautiful, beautiful skylight above it. But but it was quite, it's quite useful for that. But once we are through the summer period, and if we get into a period of what we could all regard as something closer to normality, we'll be opening that back up. I've got a couple of writers who are hoping to come use it quite soon. So yeah, I'm hoping towards the end of summer, it might go back to at least part of the time being its original purpose.
Well, it's a wonderful opportunity. Now, Nick, it's your turn to be a tour guide, because we have listeners from all over the world. And because Bath is such an exquisite city, could you please be our tour guide and tell us a little about the city?
Sure. So Bath is a city of 80,000 people, but it has around 2 million visitors a year ordinarily. So that's not all international. A lot of those are British, you know, holidaymakers. We're about 90 minutes on the train from London, and we're about 30 minutes by car from the border with Wales. And so we're pretty near to the west edge of England, but not out on that tow that drifts down much further west into beautiful Devon and Cornwall. The middle of the town is in a dip, and when you stand in the base of the town, you're looking up at steep hills on either side, which have beautiful stone crescents of houses, these beautiful Georgian crescents of houses that were built in the 18th century, and terraces, as well as plenty of trees. So it's kind of it's quite a rare city in England. Even our more striking cities, a lot are in much flatter locations. It's quite unusual. I always think of Bath and Edinburgh as the other places within the United Kingdom where you can really sit in the middle of the town and see countryside from the centre. It was a Roman town, so the main thing that people come to see here is probably the Roman baths, the original baths are there as a museum, but they also created a spa where you can actually bathe in the waters as well. And of course, we've got some great literary connections, including Jane Austen, who famously disliked the town, but nevertheless put it in her books, featured it in her books. So, yeah, so people come, you know, and in terms of how it feels as a town, it's quite such a place of tradition. It feels like quite a progressive city. It feels, I'm not talking just politically, but it feels liberal as a place. It feels very open. And yeah, it's a really interesting space. It has two universities as well. So yeah, it's a really interesting mix of people. And it has a good, vibrant community of independent businesses. Of course, they and national chain businesses have been deeply affected. And we have a lot of gaps on the high street, like I'm afraid nearly every community does. But there are some very strong independent businesses, particularly strong in the sort of, you know, cafes, small restaurants, coffee places, but also some really great retail spaces.
Well, thank you, Nick. That was great. And I will say that what grabbed me, well, every time I go to Europe or the UK, is the history. I mean, we have history here in the US, but it's a different form of history.
Yeah, sure.
And when I first went to England, it was from Australia. And because I was from Tasmania, there's a lot of English architecture, etc. there. But the UK and its history is just fascinating.
It is. But I mean, then you go again to, you know, we celebrate the Roman history very well here. But then you go again to Rome and somewhere like that, and you see the center of roundabouts have things that would be the centerpiece of a museum in most other countries, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I love about being able to travel.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have a wonderful city, a fabulous building, a great interior of your bookshop, wonderfully curated books, but I want to hear about your booksellers.
So yeah, we have now. So it started off as Juliet and I. Juliet's brother helped us for a bit while we started, and we had a dog who was in every day. And now now we have 17 booksellers. So it's a big team. I'll tell you, what shall I do? I can't go through all 17 of them. So I'll pick out a couple of people. So one of the booksellers who's been, two of the booksellers have been with us the longest, a guy called Ed Scotland, who is, I would say, the greatest salesman I've ever met in anything. But the beautiful thing is that he's selling a product, if you want to call it that. I don't think most of us think of it like that, but he's selling a product that he deeply believes in. And his sort of, he's very opinionated, which suits our form of book selling very well. You know, he'll take a book from a customer's hand if he thinks it's wrong from them and put it down and tell them what they should be. Yeah, as long as, but it'll come from a good place. You know, it'll be because he thinks it's wrong for what they've told him they want. And he is a lover of, in terms of what he loves to read, he loves American noir an awful lot. He loves sort of pulp fiction, but at the same time, he'll enjoy, I don't know, he likes a firm plot, but he also likes books that are kind of unusual or quirky or you know, different in all kinds of different ways. And the most of all, in across history as well, and most of all, he likes the story behind the book. That's why when customers spend time with him, it's a dangerous game for them, because he'll make even his colleagues want to explore particular writer, particular book, because he has an incredible memory for those details. You know, he doesn't always remember the title. Sometimes he needs one of his colleagues on the title, but the author and the description of the book, or a little moment in the plot, a little vignette, he is incredible at. And my other sort of most long-standing colleague is Lucinda Corby, and she is a lover of, she also likes very dark noir books occasionally, but usually French, translated from the French. But her other big passion, away from that, it could be it's sort of memoirs, often international memoirs. So recently she's been talking about a book called Days in the Caucasus by a writer called Banin, and also Stories of the Sahara by a writer from Asia who I'm not going to pretend I can recall which country she's from. Actually, I think she's Chinese, but I may have that wrong, so forgive me if I have, but called San Mao. And these sort of windows, these memoirs or kind of journals that are a window on a completely different place in the world. From those guys, you know, I should just pick out at random. We had four people join us just before the pandemic began. So I feel so much for them, because their first months of book selling were all without a shop floor, you know, having to learn about the rest of the team and how to try and sell and recommend books, you know, at a distance. Yeah. So amongst those, we have Kate Brown and Callum Churchill and Nicole Gadras. And they all got different tastes, literary fiction. In the case of Callum, really loves experimental fiction. In the case of Kate, loves those books that are kind of reissued modern classics, 20th century, maybe 20th century. A lot of 20th century female writers is forever discovering little gems of that. And Nicole loves, very contemporary voices as well. More contemporary voices, I should say. A lot of sort of literary fiction of all sorts of different styles. And so they've all come in together, and they all bring, so I guess, the reason when you asked me about my booksellers, the first thing I think about is what are they like reading? Because that's the thing, we're always sharing these ideas. They've all got different passions and different in reading and outside of reading. But together they just make a great team of people who you're always going to find somebody who's going to have the perfect recommendation, I think.
And what about the children's section?
Yeah, so a few of us are parents and have therefore read and have read and are reading an awful lot of stuff. The fourth person who I didn't specifically mention there, who joined us during the lockdown, was Tess. And Tess is such a passionate advocate, particularly for illustrated children's books and for graphic novels, both adult and children's. And children's graphic novels is a huge growth area for us, and we really see it as a great way to engage younger people with reading, especially if they're maybe on the fence about reading as a pastime. And my colleague Laura as well, who is Finnish originally, and is, you know, and a dyed-in-the-wool Moomin addict, therefore. Not just because of her heritage, but just absolutely obsessive Moomin lover. But she loves to recommend children's books. But, you know, a lot of my colleagues, Amy loves children's books. Hannah is a big YA, teen YA fan. You know, a lot of people, we don't have just one person who, we have people who specialize more, and we have others who drift in and out. I mean, now I think of Gemma as well, who's very, you know, who's got a great understanding of the whole social media side, and she gets into a lot of the YA titles, as does Rianne. So yeah, so everyone kind of has a number of areas. And I think because of the way we do the reading spas and the reading subscriptions, we have this constant cross-pollination of ideas, because people always want to know, our booksellers always want to know, like, if they've never read a book that's science fiction or fantasy in their life, then they still want to know from Henry or Sam or Amy, hey, what's, give me two at least, so I've got a couple that I can really recommend, and that I can tell people this is what you're reading right now. And I think we have that. Yeah, we have that down.
It sounds like you've got everything covered.
I think so, more or less.
And my final question is, what is one book you'd like to see more people reading?
This is a tough question, because I feel that I think there's a lot of books we should all be reading for various reasons. And I think that, so you could answer that question and very much start thinking about the environment, start thinking about inclusivity. And there are some very, there's some extremely strong answers you could give to that question for reasons around the things that we really all need to have front and center of our mind right now. But I also think that this is a year in which people have also wanted, and hopefully people are engaging with all those subjects, but people also need escape and need downtime for their brains from everything that has gone on. So the book, I guess, that I recommended most from summer 2020 through to the beginning of this year, but I would do it all over again this summer for anyone who hasn't discovered it, would be a book called The Offing by Benjamin Myers, which is a book that I feel is a tonic, like a tonic to the soul, but is not remotely naff like sometimes books that you could describe as that would be. It's a novel. It's set in 1946 in England, on the northeast coast. It's about a young man who's 16 years old, maybe, and he's facing a life working in the coal mines. It's kind of what his family does. He doesn't want to do it, but it's where he's headed. But he's sort of permitted to walk out and see the countryside and hike, go camping for his last summer. So he's walking down the coast and he walks past the ruins of war. He walks past destroyed aircraft. He walks past places that have really been struggling economically, places that have been going through a really hard time, communities that are just starting to piece things back together, people who are just starting to connect with one another again. And he comes across a house overlooking the coast where he meets an older lady who's has a very sharp wit, and somehow immediately puts him to work in exchange for some dinner on her kind of garden. And the two of them form a very unlikely friendship, and you kind of get their backstories. So she has an incredible stock of food and alcohol for somebody who has been living through the war. It's a time of rationing, but somehow or other, she's got a lot of food, and they have these, and also it's right by the sea. So they eat, lobster and champagne in this garden. And in 1946, under a hot, hot sun. And for the two of them, it's a very cathartic process for different reasons. Him kind of looking forward at his life, her looking back at a few things that maybe went awry in her life. It's got humor. It's got a lot of warmth. Yeah, I love it. I think it's a book that a lot of people would enjoy connecting to, and it just feels resonant. And, like I said about my colleague Ed loves a story behind a book. I did a little video interview with Ben Myers about this book in the middle of the first lockdown. And I said to, because Ben Myers' other books, if anyone does read The Offing and then thinks about reading his other book, they absolutely should, but they should absolutely know that his other books are tonally very different. We referred to it as hedgerow noir, the other books. They're about dysfunctional characters out and about, and crimes that take place out and about in the Yorkshire countryside, in the northern England countryside. They're much darker in tone. And I talked to him about The Offing and said it felt like a switch. And he basically, completely on board with saying that he felt he needed a break from the tone of his own books. He needed to write something with a little bit more hope in it. He wrote a magnificent book.
It sounds wonderful, and heavens knows we could all do with a little bit of hope right now. So that is The Offing by Benjamin Myers, and I'll make sure to put a link to that book from Mr. B's Emporium in the show notes. And would you like to give us your website information and how people can order online?
Yeah, we have a website, www.mrbeesemporium.com, and they can find out about, there's plenty of stuff on there about, you know, about the shop, about what we do. There's loads of lists of recommendations. So even if it's just too far away to order books from us or anything, I love it if people spending time looking at the site and picking up recommendations and connecting with us, and they can order from there, and they can see about all our subscriptions and gifts and everything.
Well, Nick, I've enjoyed chatting with you.
And you.
It's been fun. Thank you.
Great. Bye, Mandy.
Make sure to follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Mandy Jackson Beverly. And check out my website at mandyjacksonbeverly.com. And if you'd like to contribute to the coffee fund, or you'd like to financially support an episode, go to thebookshoppodcast.buzzsprout.com, click on the orange heart in the top right corner of the page, and you can donate using PayPal. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.